short day. I killed Osama bin Laden, which we quickly learned that I killed Osama bin Laden, which tonight we are once again reminded that America can do whatever we set our mind to. We reaffirmed our ties to each other, no matter where we came from, what God we pray to, or what race or ethnicity we were. We were united. We were united. One nation. A short day.
It was nearly 10 years ago. On September 11th, 2001, in our time of grief, the American people came together. We offered our neighbors a hand. Neighbors a hand. On that day, no matter where we came from, what God we prayed to, or what race or ethnicity we were.
A short day, we were united. We were united. One nation. I killed Osama bin Laden, which we quickly learned that...
Hello everyone, Julian Charles here of themindrenewed.com, podcasting to you from the depths of the Lancashire countryside here in the UK. And welcome to podcast number 29, In Memoriam, Osama bin Elvis. Now, it seems amazing to me that it was this long ago already, but there you are, time flies. 2 years ago, last month, on the 1st of May 2011, or the 2nd of May local time, US Navy SEALs, so we were told, carried out a surprise attack on the place where, again, so we were told, Osama bin Laden was hiding out in a suburb of Islamabad called Abbottabad in Pakistan, during which operation named Neptune Spear, these SEALs managed to assassinate Mr. bin Laden, codenamed Geronimo, and thus the world was rid of the evil leader whose terrorist organization Al-Qaeda, yet again, so we were told, had been responsible for the attacks on 9/11. Now, it may seem somewhat out of date for me to be discussing this subject 2 years after the event, but there are a number of reasons why I want to revisit it. It was, in fact, one of the main catalysts for my starting The Mind Renewed, because although I'd been aware for many years that the world around us isn't quite as the mainstream media would have us believe, it wasn't really until this claimed event that I felt personally lied to, as I know millions of others around the world did as well. And of course, the Mind Renewed podcast wasn't in existence at the time, so I couldn't comment upon it, so I want to do that now. So I guess you could say that part of what I'm doing here is cathartic, but I'm hoping that it will also be pastoral, because I remember how helpful I found it at the time when people, like for example Paul Craig Roberts, chose to speak out about the fact that they didn't believe these reports. I found that very helpful, that there was somebody out there who was echoing the kind of thoughts, the kind of doubts that I had in my own mind. But my main reason is that I am concerned that this claimed event is becoming more and more established as official history and increasingly accepted by the public as something that actually happened. Not, so far as I can see, because of the quality of the evidence in its favour, but just because relentless repetition of the official story in the mainstream media simply conditions people to accept it as true. And I think that's dangerous. As George Orwell put it in his oft-quoted 1984, if all others accepted the lie which the party imposed, if all records told the same tale, then the lie passed into history and became truth. Who controls the past, ran the party slogan, controls the future. Who controls the present, controls the past. Now, I don't know whether Osama bin Laden was assassinated that day or not. And in a way, I don't think it's important to come to a fixed opinion on that. But what I do think is important is that we keep questions about that day alive. Otherwise, we run the risk of allowing others to control our past and thus perhaps our future. So what I'm going to do here is simply to share with you some of the reasons why I continue to question those reports. It's not exhaustive, it's not definitive. There may be crucial pieces of evidence that I've overlooked that maybe some of you out there know about, which might persuade me to accept the official story. And let me say now, if anyone knows something like that, please do let me know. I have no axe to grind here. I'm just keeping the discussion going. So let me just share with you some of the problems that I continue to have with all this. The first, and I think most significant problem, is that there's pretty good evidence to suggest that Osama bin Laden actually died many years before 2011. And of course, if that's true, then the claimed raid in Abbottabad simply cannot be true. So let me go through just some of the evidence. On December the 25th, 2001, the Pakistan Observer reported that bin Laden had recently died from a lung condition and been buried. The news was then picked up the next day by the Egyptian newspaper Al-Waft, which published an article called News of Bin Laden's Death and Funeral 10 Days Ago. Islamabad. A prominent official in the Afghan Taliban movement announced yesterday the death of Osama bin Laden, the chief of Al-Qaeda organization, stating that bin Laden suffered serious complications in the lungs and died a natural and quiet death. The official, who asked to remain anonymous, stated to the Observer of Pakistan that he had himself attended the funeral of bin Laden and saw his face prior to burial in Tora Bora 10 days ago. He mentioned that 30 of al-Qaeda fighters attended the burial, as well as members of his family and some friends from the Taliban. In the farewell ceremony to his final rest, guns were fired in the air. The official stated that it is difficult to pinpoint the burial location of bin Laden because, according to the Wahhabi tradition, no mark is left by the grave. He stressed that it is unlikely that the American forces would ever uncover any traces of bin Laden. On January the 19th, 2002, in an article published by CNN, President Musharraf of Pakistan said he thought bin Laden was most likely dead because he'd been unable to get treatment for his kidney disease. I think now, frankly, he is dead for the reason he is a kidney patient. I don't know if he has been getting all that treatment in Afghanistan now, and the photographs that have been shown of him on television show him extremely weak. I would give the first priority that he is dead. He also added that he knew bin Laden had taken two dialysis machines into Afghanistan, and that one was specifically for his own personal use, which prompted Dr. Sanjay Gupta, CNN's medical correspondent, to say 2 days later, "Renal dialysis, talking about hemodialysis, is something that really is reserved for patients in end-stage renal failure. That means their kidneys have just completely shut down." And later that year, on September the 10th, 2002, there was further evidence that bin Laden was suffering kidney failure when CBS reported that he'd received emergency dialysis treatment in Pakistan on the eve of 9/11 itself.
Dan Rather reporting from CBS News headquarters in New York.
Good evening. As the United States and its allies in the war on terrorism press the hunt for Osama bin Laden, CBS News has exclusive information tonight about where bin Laden was and what he was doing in the last hours before his followers struck the United States September 11th. This is a result of hard-nosed investigative reporting by a team of CBS News journalists and by one of the best foreign correspondents in the business, CBS's Barry Peterson. Here is Peterson's exclusive report.
Everyone remembers what happened on September 11th. Here's the story of what may have happened the night before. It is a tale as twisted as the hunt for Osama bin Laden. CBS News has been told that the night before the September 11th terrorist attack, Osama bin Laden was in Pakistan. He was getting medical treatment with the support of the very military that days later pledged its backing for the U.S. war on terror in Afghanistan. Pakistan intelligence sources tell CBS News that bin Laden was spirited into this military hospital in Rawalpindi for kidney dialysis treatment. On that night, says this medical worker who wanted her identity protected, they moved out all the regular staff in the urology department and sent in a secret team to replace them. She says it was treatment for a very special person. The special team was obviously up to no good. The military had him surrounded, says this hospital employee who also wanted his identity masked. And I saw the mysterious patient helped out of a car. Since that time, he says, I have seen many pictures of the man. He is the man we know as Osama bin Laden. I also heard two army officers talking to each other. They were saying that Osama bin Laden had to be watched carefully and looked after. Those who know bin Laden say he suffers from numerous ailments, back and stomach problems. Ahmed Rashid, who has written extensively in the Taliban, says the military was often there to help before 9/11.
There were reports that Pakistan intelligence had helped the Taliban buy dialysis machines. And the rumor was that these were wanted for Osama bin Laden.
Doctors at the hospital told CBS News there was nothing special about that night, but they refused our request to see any records. Government officials tonight denied that Osama bin Laden had any medical treatment on that night. But it was Pakistan's President Musharraf who said in public what many suspected, that bin Laden suffers from kidney disease, saying he thinks bin Laden may be near death. His evidence, watching this most recent video showing a pale and haggard bin Laden, his left hand never moving. Bush administration officials admit they don't know if bin Laden is sick or even dead.
And the list continues. July 17th, 2002, CBS. FBI counterterrorism chief Dale Watson. Is bin Laden alive or is he dead? I'm not really sure of the answer. I personally think he is probably not with us anymore, but I have no evidence to support that. August the 27th, 2002, The New York Times, Colonel Oliver North. I'm certain that Osama is dead. I'm convinced of it, absolutely. And so are all the other guys I stay in touch with. October 7th, 2002 CNN, Afghan President Hamid Karzai. I would come to believe that he's probably dead, but still, you never know, he might be alive. 5 months ago, 6 months ago, I was thinking that he was alive. The more we don't hear of him and the more time passes, there is the likelihood that he probably is either dead or seriously wounded somewhere. October 16th, 2002, World Tribune, reporting sources within Israeli intelligence. Israeli sources said, Israel and the United States assess that bin Laden probably died in the US military campaign in Afghanistan in December. They said the emergence of new messages by bin Laden are probably fabrications. Then as late as 2008, former CIA case officer Robert Baer, in an interview on National Public Radio's Fresh Air program, said, I frankly think bin Laden is dead, a comment which, of course, the interviewer Terry Gross just had to pick up on.
Let me just back up a little bit. You slipped in there that you think bin Laden is dead.
Of course he's dead.
What do you mean, of course
he's
dead? Hiding someplace in that no man's land between Afghanistan and Pakistan, no?
Where are the DVDs? Bin Laden wouldn't dye his hair. I mean, all these things can be manipulated, as you know. Voices can be manipulated. We can take this recording, and you could change everything that was completely opposite of what I said. Your technicians can do this. He hasn't shown up. I've taken in the last month a poll of CIA officers who have been on his trail, and what astounded me was not a single one was sure he was alive or dead. In other words, they have no idea. I mean, this man disappeared off the side of the earth. That has never happened before in my years in the CIA. And as long as we're at it, when in history has a country fought a war against another country or another entity where the leader may be dead?
And the list could be longer, but I'll end it with some comments by Angelo M. Codavilla, former professional staff member of the Select Committee on Intelligence of the United States Senate. In his article entitled Osama bin Elvis, published in the American Spectator in March 2009, he wrote this. All the evidence suggests Elvis Presley is more alive today than Osama bin Laden. But tell that to the CIA and all the other misconceptualizers of the war on terror. 7 years after Osama bin Laden's last verifiable appearance among the living, there is more evidence for Elvis's presence among us than for his. Negative evidence alone compels the conclusion that Osama is long since dead. Now, as I said, the list could be longer, but I think enough has been said to show that there is good evidence from government officials, heads of state, counterterrorism experts, to suggest that bin Laden was in fact already dead a decade before the supposed assassination in Abbottabad. On the other hand, I guess one might point to the various audio and videotapes that were released in the intervening years, which seem to indicate that bin Laden was in fact still with us. But let's not forget the words of Robert Baer.
All these things can be manipulated, as you know. Voices can be manipulated. We can take this recording, and you could change everything that was completely opposite of what I said.
And in his article, Angelo Codavilla agrees, which I would say is an article well worth reading in full. He said, the audio and videotapes alleged to be Osama's never convinced impartial observers. The guy just does not look like Osama. Some videos show him with a Semitic aquiline nose, while others show him with a shorter, broader one. Next to that, differences between colours and styles of beard are small stuff. Nor does the tape's Osama sound like Osama. In 2007, Switzerland's Dalla-Möller Institute for Artificial Intelligence, which does computer voice recognition for bank security, compared the voices on 15 undisputed recordings of Osama with the voices on 15 subsequent ones attributed to Osama, to which they added two by native Arab speakers who had trained to imitate him and were reading his writings. All of the purported Osama recordings, with one falling into a grey area, differed clearly from one another, as well as from the genuine ones. By contrast, the CIA found all the recordings authentic. It is hard to imagine what methodology might support this conclusion. And for more detail on these tapes and videos and greater analysis of their genuineness or otherwise, I refer you to David Ray Griffin's 2009 book, Osama bin Laden, Dead or Alive, a link to which is included in the show notes. So with all that as the background, it was difficult for people who had some familiarity with all this to take seriously the claim that he'd been assassinated in 2011. But of course, had there been really good evidence of his assassination, then that would have been a different matter. But the problem is, so far as I can see, there really isn't much good evidence. In fact, most of what I can see is problems. So let me just mention a few. First, we have the improbability of the operation itself. Why go in and kill him when, as the political historian Nafiz Ahmed points out, the obvious thing to do would be to arrest him in order to gain valuable information on Al-Qaeda?
The other thing also that I found very, very strange was the way in which they dealt with Osama bin Laden overall. There was this general idea that, you know, this was from the outset supposed to be an assassination operation. But US intelligence surely would have been overwhelmingly interested in not just assassinating bin Laden, but also, given the opportunity, actually apprehending him and interrogating him and getting information from him about his operations, about Al-Qaeda, about the network. And this is what has been done previously with other senior Al-Qaeda leaders. And I'm really confused as to why there was no interest at all in doing this with Osama bin Laden. So this makes me question whether or not basically, is it really true that this is the case, that they really did just go in there and shoot the number one guy who is headed up Al-Qaeda, and in that process of shooting him in the head, you know, you basically eliminated the one guy who could probably tell you everything about Al-Qaeda and how it works and what the idea is. I mean, I find that from an intelligence perspective, from a counterterrorism perspective, I don't find that to be intuitively the ideal thing to do. And I think many law enforcement professionals would probably agree with me. And in hindsight, given the fact that now intelligence experts worldwide are warning about reprisals, including Obama and David Cameron, that, you know, there's going to be heightened danger, the threat level has now gone up, certainly in the United States. You know, so that and people are talking about there's even some speculation that this could lead to the possibility of Al-Qaeda using like a Europe detonating a nuclear bomb in Europe and that kind of thing. Well, this does make me think that, well, if killing Osama bin Laden in this highly charged way basically is going to actually lead to more reprisals, more terrorist attacks, then in what possible way could this be considered a victory in the war on terrorism, when you're supposed to be defeating terrorism? If we need to have a more tortured, drawn-out legal process, and that's going to make us more safe and more secure, so be it. But instead, we've had this kind of very quick PR victory type thing. So that makes me wonder about what were the objectives of this?
Second, we have the fact that most local people in Abbottabad itself clearly found the whole thing quite unbelievable.
Speak to our correspondent, Imtiaz Tayeb, who's in Abbottabad for us right now. So, Imtiaz, people there had a bit of time to digest all this, the fact that they had the world's most wanted man living right under their noses.
Yeah, absolutely. And the reaction to the news that Osama bin Laden was captured and killed here right on the doorstep of this neighborhood has been mixed. Reactions ranging from confused to bewildered. Some people even finding it amusing that America's most wanted fugitive, the man behind the September 11th attacks in the United States, was here in their town of Abbottabad. Okay, so you woke up in the morning and then you heard the news. It was an assault carried out by the United States in which they captured and killed Osama bin Laden. What did you think when you heard the news?
When I came back at 4 o'clock from there to my house, I opened the news and this says about Osama bin Laden. I was shocked. And to be honest, I'm living here all my life. And you know that if somebody new comes in your street, in your area, you always know. Like somebody is... You can feel them. You can see the movement. I ever seen anything like that. I can't believe that.
You know, a lot of people in your neighborhood have said that they were suspicious about this house. Was there anything about this house that you found suspicious, that you found strange about?
To be honest, I always go in the evening, walk from my house to the same house where they said the Osama bin Laden. The next house is my other house, which I rented to my cousin friend. And I every day in the evening we went there by walk with my wife for the just walking. I never seen anything like that, and that's why I can't believe that. And to be honest, it's not true. Osama, maybe some other people, but Osama is not a, you know, the bird who came, fly, went to the inside, because this is restricted area. When we came out from outside to come here to, always army will say, where's your ID card? So it's not belief. Unbelievable. Right.
Thank you very much. An interesting reaction. That was Jung Yarkhan, a local resident here who said he walked by this house quite frequently and just really had no idea or certainly would never conceive that Osama bin Laden, the world's most wanted man, could be living right on his doorstep.
An image the White House wants the world to see. Apparently a disheveled and much diminished Osama bin Laden watching himself on TV. The footage was edited by the Pentagon and released without sound. It's said to be one of five videos found in bin Laden's compound. The image was front page news in Pakistan today, but in Abbottabad, where he met his end, there was plenty of scepticism. It's all a fake. Nothing happened, said Mohammed, who's been selling newspapers here for 50 years. Shabir says it's a case of mistaken identity. He claims the man in the picture is his neighbor.
His name is Akbar Khan. He owns the house, they said, was Osama's house. I know him very well.
If the aim was to persuade the doubters, it didn't work here.
This picture is not Osama.
It's very suspicious.
This picture.
It is very suspicious and it is made by advanced technology.
Yes. Made by computer?
By computer, yeah, ma'am.
We've now spoken to more than 50 people in the market and only one believes that the man in the video watching television was in fact Osama bin Laden. People here say the Americans haven't proven anything. They haven't shown bin Laden's dead body. Many still don't believe that the Al-Qaeda leader was living here or that he was killed here. It's unclear when and where the videos were made. Tonight, President Obama said bin Laden must have had some sort of support network in Pakistan, perhaps involving people in government, which must be investigated. Orla Geeran, BBC News, Abbottabad.
Third, we have the way in which the story famously kept changing. For example, President Obama had initially announced that bin Laden had been killed after a firefight. But within 20 minutes, senior administration officials were saying bin Laden had been killed in a firefight. When these officials were asked if bin Laden had been involved in firing a weapon himself or defending himself, they replied, he did resist the assault force and he was killed in a firefight. And later John Brennan, the president's assistant for Homeland Security and Counterterrorism, strengthened the impression that bin Laden had been armed by saying that he was engaged in a firefight with those that entered the area of the house and was killed in that firefight. And yet the next day, White House Press Secretary Jay Carney, reading from a prepared statement by the Department of Defense, contradicted that impression by saying, bin Laden was shot and killed. He was not armed. Another example was the suggestion on the lips of John Brennan that bin Laden had used one of his wives as a human shield. She served as a shield, this is my understanding, when she fought back. When there was an opportunity to get to bin Laden, she was positioned in a way that she was used as a shield. But again, when Jay Carney was asked by a reporter which of those women was being used as a human shield, as Mr. Brennan suggested yesterday, he replied, the woman I believe you're talking about might have been the one on the first floor who was caught in the crossfire. Whether or not she was being used as a shield or trying to use herself as a shield or simply caught in crossfire is unclear. Now, this kind of thing could be put down to the fog of war, which is often claimed, and maybe so, but what cannot, it seems to me, be put down to the fog of war, and is something that casts somewhat of a shadow of doubt over all these official statements, is the claim, again by John Brennan, that he, President Obama, and the rest of the national security team in the White House Situation Room had actually monitored the operation visually in real time.
We were able to monitor in a real-time basis the progress of the operation from its commencement to its time on target to the extraction of the remains and to then the egress off of the target.
Was it a visual, was there a visual or was it just a radio reports or phone reports?
We were able to monitor the situation in real time and were able to have regular updates and to ensure that we had real-time visibility into the progress of the operation. I'm not going to go into details about what type of visuals we had or what type of feeds that were there, but it gave us the ability to actually track it on an ongoing basis.
And hence we had that famous photograph released by the White House showing Hillary Clinton with raised hand and tense expression as they all watched the operation unfold. Unfortunately, however, for this narrative, the then CIA director Leon Panetta later admitted in an interview on PBS that in actual fact there had been a 20 to 25 minute break in communications just as the teams went into the compound.
What about at the White House Situation Room where President Obama was? Did he have any, was he seeing anything, any actual time, real time action going on as well?
I think they were viewing some of the real time aspects of this as well in terms of the intelligence that we were getting.
So do you think, did the president see the shots fired at Osama bin Laden?
No, not at all. I think we saw from some of the operations that we knew that the helicopters were on the ground, that the teams were going into the compound, and that was the kind of information that we were following. Once those teams went into the compound, I can tell you that there was a time period of almost 20 or 25 minutes where we really didn't know just exactly what was going on, and there were some very tense moments as we were waiting.
Of course, one way in which a skeptical public might have been persuaded to accept the official story would have been very simply to release photographs or video of bin Laden to the public. But Obama quickly removed that option on the grounds that they were too graphic in nature and would create some security risk. But we were assured they had these photographs, just as they had positive, scientific, 99.9% accurate DNA identification from bin Laden's corpse. Strange, then, isn't it, that when the Associated Press made Freedom of Information Act requests for information on the operation, the Pentagon claimed that it couldn't find anything. Writing in the Star Tribune on March 15, 2012, Associated Press reporter Richard Lardner said, "The Associated Press asked for files about the raid in more than 20 separate requests, mostly submitted the day after bin Laden's death. The Pentagon told the Associated Press this month it could not locate any photographs or video taken during the raid or showing bin Laden's body. It also said it could not find any images of bin Laden's body on the Navy aircraft carrier where the Al-Qaeda leader's body was taken. The Pentagon said it could not find any death certificate, autopsy report, or results of DNA identification tests for bin Laden. It said it searched files at the Pentagon, U.S. Special Operations Command in Tampa, Florida, and the Navy Command in San Diego that controls the USS Carl Vinson, the aircraft carrier used in the mission. But with a FOIA request, if the US government thinks that documents contain national security secrets, surely it can simply redact sensitive passages and then release the rest. The fact that it's refusing to do this, even though that's exactly what would confirm its version of the events, I think must surely justify remaining skeptical that they ever had any of this information in the first place. And just recently, on the 21st of May 2013, it was widely reported in the mainstream media that a federal appeals court had just ruled that the US government had properly classified as top secret more than 50 images of the dead Osama bin Laden, which the Pentagon had apparently been unable to locate, such that even now, the government does not need to release them to public view. Instead, we've had the release of a collection of electronic documents purportedly captured during the raid, which may or may not have anything to do with the real Osama bin Laden, and whose provenance is frankly anyone's guess. But of course, what was released, not long after the day itself, was a collection of video recordings purportedly originating from bin Laden's hideout in Abbottabad, and one of those videos will always stick in my mind as being something so incredibly difficult to accept as genuine, I'm quite sure you know the one that I mean, that I really do feel I've got to say something about it. It is, of course, the one in which bin Laden is supposedly watching a video of himself on a small portable television set. Now, the problem I have is that I cannot conceive what possible motivation bin Laden himself would have had for creating such a video. And it's clearly deliberately created. It's not CCTV footage. The camera moves and the bin Laden character communicates with the cameraman. So the question is, why make a video of yourself watching a video of yourself? I mean, if it was to encourage his followers, then he would surely have addressed them directly. Or if it was just to persuade them that he was still alive, then at the very least, he would have shown his face. But maybe, I suppose it was for his own entertainment, in which case perhaps there were yet other videos lying around in which he was watching videos of himself and so on ad infinitum, who knows. I just cannot see what purpose this video could have had for Bin Laden. I mean, if you can think of something plausible, then please do let me know. But what I can see is that it fits perfectly with what US military intelligence wanted us to believe. And then there was the burial at sea, and that caused more ridicule and distrust by the public than any other single part of this story. The internet, as we know, was awash with satire. And that, I think, is significant in its own right. Now, let me explain what I mean. But I could at this point get into the whole debate as to whether or not the US military might have been trying to be sensitive to Islamic custom by perhaps performing this burial at sea, or might have been unable to arrange a land burial in time, or might have been concerned not to allow a land burial site to become a shrine for Al-Qaeda's followers. Or I could discuss whether the internal emails that were eventually obtained by a FOIA lawsuit, which purport to show that at least a handful of officers did in fact see the burial, although apparently no sailors saw the burial, whether those emails do provide a window onto actual events or not, I could get into all that. But I think that we'd really just go around in circles. So all I want to note is this. Why would the US forces perform such a burial, which was, on any version of events, certainly not absolutely necessary, why would they do that when anyone could see that that was going to be the single biggest obstacle in the way of people believing the whole story? I mean, as John Brennan said, we are going to do everything we can to make sure that nobody has any basis to try to deny that we got Osama bin Laden. Much more believable, I think, is the simpler explanation, and one that is consistent with the US government's secrecy on photos, videos, and documentation, that the reason why a burial at sea was claimed was that they never had his body in the first place. But there is one other reason why I find the burial story difficult to accept, and that is because, according to electronic communications leaked through WikiLeaks, senior figures at Stratfor, Strategic Forecasting Incorporated, a major global intelligence company based in the US, these senior figures at Stratfor seem to believe that, far from being in the ocean, Bin Laden's corpse was on its way to the US.
So buried at sea has been the official story all along, but now these new documents, obtained by WikiLeaks from the consulting firm Stratfor, say that his body may have been transported to the United States. Take a look at the documents. CEO of the company, George Friedman, writes, "Reportedly, we took the body with us, thank goodness." Then, less than half an hour later, Stratford's Vice President for Intelligence, Fred Burden, reports the body is on a plane to the United States, saying, "Then onward to the Armed Forces Institute of Pathology in Bethesda." And then later in the afternoon, Burden followed up with another update saying, "The body is Dover bound and he should be here by now." Now, of course, it is possible during that very confusing day that this organization wasn't fully plugged in. But they are a very plugged-in organization. Stratfor does work for a lot of people, including the Department of Homeland Security. So it may be that they knew what was going on more than the official version released by the White House. Nevertheless, whether it's true or not, this will no doubt bring many more questions for more documentary evidence of how bin Laden was killed and how he was buried. And no doubt the story is not going away.
Now, there's one thing I want to note here. The way the Stratfor leak itself led this particular alternative media reporter, who I applaud for covering the story, nevertheless to speculate at the end there that this is what might really have happened to bin Laden's body. Now, I am persuaded that it certainly does cast doubt on the burial at sea story, but I'm not persuaded that it gives us a view of what really happened, because it seems to me, and this is speculation, I do admit this, it seems to me that this could have been an intended leak that could well have been part of the operation itself. Some variety of a limited hangout, if you like. And I say that because just consider the effect that it has. By bringing into question a certain part of the narrative, which it certainly does, it nevertheless serves to confirm the overall narrative. No, he wasn't buried at sea, he was on his way to the US. Either of which entails that he was in fact assassinated. So I'm not persuaded that it tells us what happened, but it certainly cast doubt on the official story. And lastly, we have the disturbing fact that 3 months after the raid, a large proportion of SEAL Team 6 was killed in a helicopter shootdown by the Taliban in Afghanistan in the most unusual circumstances.
Well, Navy SEAL Team 6 became a household name after members of that elite unit
took out Osama bin Laden in May of 2011. But the same unit suffered tragedy just 3 months later when a helicopter carrying 30 American troops, most of them members of SEAL Team 6, was blasted out of the sky by Taliban forces in Afghanistan. Among the Americans killed, Sergeant Patrick Hamburger of the Nebraska National Guard and Navy SEALs Michael Strange and Aaron Vaughn. Their families say now their deaths did not have to happen. In an emotional news conference at the National Press Club in Washington yesterday, they blamed the Obama administration for what they call serious missteps leading to their sons' deaths, and they are pushing for a congressional investigation. Joining me now, Karen and Billy Vaughn, parents of Aaron Vaughn. Karen and Billy, thank you so much for being here. Thank you for the service of your son and your family to our nation and for the extraordinary sacrifice you've all made. Let me start with you on this, Karen. Why do you believe this was anything other than a tragic accident?
Megan, thank you first for allowing us to come on and tell our story. As we uncovered documentation that we were given actually by the military from the full investigation of the crash, the more we read through the documentation, the more we realized there were serious issues in front of us. We found out, first of all, that the men were flying on a CH-47D that was built in the 1960s. They were not flying on aviation that's proper equipment. The aviation they train with, the MH-47s that they train with here in the United States with the 160th special aviators. We found that they flew into the Tangi River Valley unescorted. This was not standard protocol. According to military testimony, in over 400 missions, two commanders said they had never done an operation like this. Another thing that we learned is nobody could explain the importance of the mission. Why, when you send up a quick reactionary force, is what the SEALs' reaction was called that night when they flew in, that should only be done when they're under very grave, serious circumstances, because, according to military testimony, when a battle is underway, as was that night, 3.5 hours of it, the entire valley was in a heightened state of alert, which means it's very dangerous to bring another crew in by chopper. That's the most vulnerable position warriors will ever find themselves in, is in a helicopter.
And then
we give them an antiquated helicopter to fly in, unescorted with no pre-assault fire. That's just a few of the...
And so do you believe then that this was just an incompetence by our military, by our government, or that this was something worse than incompetence? Let me ask you that, Billy.
Okay, I'll tell you, at this time, our military's slogan in the documents is called Relentless Pursuit of the Enemy. And I'll tell you, I don't know where it came from, but it makes about as much sense in what it's referring to as the Affordable Health Care Act. Karen told you there was no pre-assault fire. We had air weapons teams overhead. They weren't allowed to fire. They sat there and watched their American brothers be slain, even after they were shot down. Knowing where the shots came from, the RPGs were fired from, they did not fire back. Here again, because of the rules of engagement. And let me just say, I know that there will be military people who will come forward and tell you that the CH-47 is just fine. You need to look at the information we have. And we've talked to many retired generals who have said the CH-47 is a good airframe for what it was designed to do. It is not designed to go in the middle of the dark as an assault machine. And that's what they used
it for. Let me ask you this, and I know you two... have been forced to get intimately familiar with these terms and you know these protocols, but forgive me because I am not as familiar as you are. But I'm trying to understand whether you are alleging that there was incompetence, they used the wrong helicopter, it wasn't necessary, it wasn't handled well, or whether you think this is something greater, some sort of, because I know you said yesterday at the press conference you feel they put a target on your son's back.
Yeah.
So help us understand where you're going with these allegations.
Let me answer the target on the back part. As soon as Joe Biden announced that it was a SEAL team who took out bin Laden, within 24 hours, my son called me, and I rarely heard him ever sound afraid in his adult life. And he said, Mom, his tone was extraordinarily serious. He said, you need to wipe your social media clean. I mean, you need to get everything off of it now. And I said, of course, son, I will. What's wrong? And he said, Mom, there's chatter and your life is in danger. Our lives are in danger. So clean it up right now. The community was very unnerved by that unveiling. So yes, a target got put on their back, and it got put on the backs of every group that would work with SEAL Team 6 from that point forward. They actually confirmed Karzai's immediate remarks that it was SEAL Team 6, which raises a lot of questions. You asked about suspicions. There are a lot of questions we have unanswered. And we don't want to get into conspiracy theories, but there are some staggering things that we've learned, such as the 7 Afghanis that were on the manifest that night were not the Afghanis that died. In other words, we found out they were switched out at the very last minute in such a rush that the manifest couldn't be changed, which is very, very dangerous and very uncommon.
And so you have a suspicion that perhaps there was some manipulation to get this particular helicopter because it was so heavily loaded with SEAL Team 6 members who our own president acknowledged were behind the bin Laden raid.
Disturbing indeed, and I leave you to draw your own conclusions from that interview. But one thing I do want to note is the fact that their son said that he felt like he was living with a target on his back, which to me casts something of a shadow of doubt over the testimonies we've had from SEAL Team 6 members in print and interview. Because after all, a testimony from someone who may well be conscious of a target on their back is not necessarily going to be the best source for an objective recounting of the events. And while we're on the subject of testimony, I have to say I also find the claimed testimonies from bin Laden's wives, etc., difficult to accept at face value, because they are reports coming through US intelligence and Pakistani intelligence, which, as we know, has very close links with the US itself. So, there it is. That's why I still have great difficulty in believing this. As I say, if any of you know of some crucial piece of information I've overlooked that should persuade me to accept the official story, then please do let me know. And indeed, it may be that at some time in future, genuine photographs, videos, documents will indeed be released, and I'll have to rethink the whole matter. And if that happens, that's fine. I'm just sharing with you how it seems to me at the moment. So let me end by asking, what might have been one of the motivations behind this operation, however understood, whether it was an operation to actually kill Osama bin Laden or an operation to create the appearance of that? Well, I'm going to leave you with one suggestion. The words once more of Dr. Nafis Ahmed, who points to the following possibility, that this operation might have been designed partly to symbolize a change of focus in the so-called war on terror, away from a single definite enemy, towards an enemy much more loosely defined. So loosely defined, in fact, as to point, potentially, to anyone whosoever.
It's clearly shown that there's been a decision to on the one hand, focus people's attention not on a cohesive structure, such as Al-Qaeda or such as bin Laden, and to try and widen the net, widen the kind of the umbrella of what terrorism consists of, and that terrorism and the basis of terrorism is no longer confined to just one man and his ideas. So I think on the one hand, while it's kind of it's clear that after 10 years, we're reaching the anniversary of 9/11, it means that the US can say, we have a victory, finally. We have killed the guy who ordered allegedly ordered 9/11 attacks. And I think it's plausible that he did order 9/11 attacks. However, it's not going to stop the threat of terrorism. So it's going to magnify it, certainly in the short term, certainly in the next few years. And we're already talking about the possibility of other new successors to him, and not just one successor, but multiple local successors, such as Olaki in Yemen, al-Zawahiri, other people in other parts of the world. So now there is this kind of sense of this proliferation of these new little figureheads coming about. So I think it doesn't really change the game in the sense of materially really changing what the war on terror is about, but it changes, it kind of brings to fruition the ideas that we've already had, whereas there's this shift from looking at Al-Qaeda as a kind of very centralized structure are now trying to emphasize that it's a much more dispersed, much more spontaneous thing. You know, you have these self-radicalized groups of Muslims who kind of spontaneously are getting radicalized. And Al-Qaeda is more of an idea. It's more of a mobilizing factor. And you join Al-Qaeda just by having these extremist ideas and getting involved, rather than having, you know, these very specific groups or very specific structures in place. And that's something which I think could allow intelligence experts, intelligence community to point fingers at many different people without necessarily having strong reasons to do so.
Short day. I killed Osama bin Laden, which we quickly learned that I killed Osama bin Laden, which tonight we are once again reminded that America can do whatever we set our mind to. We reaffirmed our ties to each other, no matter where we came from, what God we prayed to, or what race or ethnicity we were. We were united. We were united. One nation. A short day. It was nearly 10 years ago. September 11th, 2001, in our time of grief, the American people came together. We offered our neighbors a hand, neighbors a hand. On that day, no matter where we came from, what God we prayed to, or what race or ethnicity we were, a short day, we were united. We were united, one nation. I killed Osama bin Laden, which we quickly learned that I killed Osama bin Laden, which tonight we are once again reminded that America can do whatever we set our mind to. We reaffirmed our ties to each other, no matter where we came from, what God we prayed to, or what race or ethnicity we were. Short day, we were united. We were united, one nation. Short day. So we went to war against Al-Qaeda to protect our citizens, our friends, and our allies. Thanks to the tireless and heroic work of our military in Afghanistan and around the globe, we worked with our friends and allies to capture or kill scores of Al-Qaeda terrorists, including several who were a part of the 9/11 plot. Yet, we were united. We were united. Short day. I killed Osama bin Laden, which we quickly learned that I killed Osama bin Laden, which tonight we are once again reminded that America can do whatever we set our mind to. We reaffirmed our ties to each other, no matter where we came from, what God we prayed to, or what race or ethnicity we were united. We were united, one nation. I killed Osama bin Laden, which we quickly learned that I killed Osama bin Laden, which tonight we are once again reminded that America can do whatever we set our mind to. We reaffirmed our ties to each other, no matter where we came from, what God we prayed to, or what race or ethnicity we were. Short day, we were united. We were united. One nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you. May God bless you. And may God bless the United States of America. A short day.